Hey guys, it's Charles from the Barbershop Group Podcast, and hopefully everybody's having a great day today or great night whenever you happen to be listening to this podcast. But today I'll be covering part four of Taking on the Ego. If you've not had a chance to hear part one, two, or three, you can go back and find those in our previous episodes. And hopefully this will be winding down, unless you guys want to hear more. I think that there are probably just two or three short segments about the ego, just things that I have learned over time, things that have been taught to me, things that have happened as a result of other circumstances in life that made me kind of look at my own ego, look at collective ego, and just assess what was really going on with people. So the fourth part of Taking on the Ego involves this belief that we are separate from everyone else. Sometimes we've been so indoctrinated by systems of thought that we almost come to think the world can't exist without us. You know, our jobs can't, families, our kids can't, our lovers certainly can't exist without us, or they shouldn't anyway. You know, we like to think that we are extremely special in that regard, and that somehow we are the reason for all of the goodness that happens around us, when in fact, well, we probably really truly aren't. You know, taking on the ego, looking at our separateness, is really, you know, interesting, because it's something that we see happening around the world today. We see it happening here in America, and we see it happening abroad, where we've allowed all types of separateness to tear us away from the unity of things. And that tearing away from unity decreases humility in all of us, in some of us. And it does so in the name of survival. You know, a lot of people have created groups for their survival. If you talk to a lot of anthropologists and people like that, they'll tell you that tribes and things like that were developed in order to ensure safety and survival. But, you know, survival of what exactly? Survival of our cultures, our histories, our traditions, our nations and countries. Survival of our religions, of our genders, our races and ethnic groups, our skills, talents, abilities, our health, our beauty, our occupations, and on and on and on. Intellects, it's all guided by the individual or collective ego. It is the ego's desire to use all of these things, you know, in the name of its survival. And it often has convinced us that these many points of separateness are good for our well-being. A lot of us will rationalize some of the things that I mentioned in order to develop our identities, or to say, well, it's for this culture or for my culture or my people and things like that. And if you really, really start to unwind it all, if you start to peel back the layers, you'll see that there's a lot of ego at play that we aren't truly honest about. And there's a guy named Thomas Merton, and some of you all are probably familiar with Thomas Merton, who is said to be one of the Christian ascetics who lived a very short life, unfortunately, but was very, very introspective and did a lot of great writing. Thomas Merton said, "We are already one, but we imagine that we are not. What we really have to do is recover our original unity." And this isn't something Merton or I or anyone else is really pulling out of thin air. I know it sounds crazy, as I said, because everybody today is about their identity. Everybody's got a cause. Everybody's got a movement that they want to be championed, that they want to be respected. Everybody has hyphened themselves, thinking that they're finding their identity, when really what they're truly finding is ego identity. They're not finding their self beyond social labels. They're finding the ego self. So Thomas Merton said, "We are already one, but we imagine that we are not." Okay. And as I said, this didn't come out of thin air. There are a lot of people who used to say things that were similar to this. Now, let me focus on air for a moment, or oxygen, right? On the chemical chart anyway, just to kind of hone in on the falseness of separateness. You know, roughly 95% of the mass of our human bodies are made up of just four chemicals. The vast majority of the human body is made up of just four chemicals: hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, nitrogen. But in every human body, there are 60 plus chemicals present, many of which are also present in the composite makeup of many created things in the earth. And I mean, don't get sidetracked. I just want to point out that, you know, our bodies, our physical makeup, we are connected to a lot of the other things that we see. You know, right now I'm sitting in one of my favorite places outside because it's a nice day and I can hear the birds, and I understand that the birds are a part of me, and I can see the flowers growing, and I know that truthfully the flowers are a part of me and I am a part of those flowers. I can hear the cars. I can understand that there are people driving the cars, and I'm related to all of those people. Whether or not we know it, we can begin to find these commonalities as long as our ego diminishes, right? So, you know, if you look around and if you look in your body, you are connected to so many things around you. I was telling a friend of mine that, you know, it's an interesting concept when you think about iron. Iron is often used to build and to tear down things in the physical world, right? And then we have iron in the body. And the iron in our bodies work to fortify the body, work to give us strength, right? If we don't have enough iron in the body, we don't have enough hemoglobin, right? Iron is also used to purify things. Iron is found in large concentrations in our kidneys and our liver. And if you look up the functions of those things, they are to purify contaminants that are found in the body, right? So you start to look at this interconnectedness of everything around you, and you go, well, wait a minute. How am I making myself different? How am I making myself separate from all of these other things? Well, the how has a lot to do with our egos. Now, this can be used for higher vibrations of understanding, but at the moment, it's really about self-knowing. You know, it's about self-knowing that we've been indoctrinated into codifying external differences and similarities. And all of this is done based on ego, on our ego wanting to have its individual way and its collective way. A man by the name of Ramana Maharshi, who was an Indian ascetic and yogi, right, said that there are no others. And what he meant by that was that if you think that you are different than somebody else or something else out there, you are not. There are no others. A lot of us tend to think that the problems that exist because of somebody else. There are problems out there. The problems are not in here. And the truth of it is, most times the problems are always in here. And when I say in here, inside of us, where we are, in our hearts, in our minds, in our locality, in our immediate spaces, when we think that something is attacking us from outside, it's really something that's attacking us from within. And so he said, there are no others. Ego survives on the basis of our belief in separation from others. It gets us to think, you know, I'm smarter than somebody. I'm stronger. I'm more talented than somebody. I'm a better spouse, right? Because, and it's crazy when you think about it, there are spouses out there who are competing with each other in a very nasty way, saying, oh, well, he doesn't do for me what I do for him, or she doesn't do for me what I do for her. And it becomes a judgment of sorts. So I'm a better spouse. I'm a better employee. I'm sure a lot of people have thought that they were a better employee than somebody else. I'm a better human, and so on. I mean, it just continues and continues and continues. And you guys know that this happens. If you sit back and really just take some time to meditate, to reflect, to ask yourself some questions about these, you'll see them pop up in your own lives the way that they popped up in mine. We work consciously and unconsciously to prove our superiority over others. And we do it sometimes in ways that we don't even realize. And that's why I said, yeah, it can also be done unconsciously, but we make choices as well. Now, on the contrary, when we are practicing connectedness to everything else that we see, when we're practicing that type of connectedness, that connectedness dominates our beliefs. We no longer feel the need to dominate others or to defeat others or to fight for what we think are our rights. And that's really important today, because I just got off of social media earlier today and I can see a lot of people are huffing and puffing about their rights right now. You know, and it's a lot of different groups. If you name the group, it's easy, you can name any particular group. They're out there lobbying, they're advocating, they're yelling, they're screaming, they're writing, they're paying people because they feel that they are entitled to a certain degree, a certain amount of rights, and that they're not getting them. And then somebody else comes along and does the same thing, right? And so they fight for rights, they wage wars, right? Ideological wars as well as physical wars, of course. They take advantage of others or try to be tagged as a winner. See, when you are living in connectedness, you don't feel that. You're not driven by that anymore. That's not your passion. That's not your motivation anymore. Your motivation is not to one-up somebody anymore. And a lot of people would say to me, well, man, don't you have any ambitions? Don't you have some goals? I do. I do have ambition. I do have goals. But I'm always checking myself today and I'm asking, well, wait, the ambition that I have, the goals that I have, are they driven by my ego? Or are they driven by my inspiration? Right? Because I'm starting to come to a place in my life where I'm losing goals. I'm letting go of goals and allowing myself to be driven more by inspiration. And I know I'm coming to a point where I understand that this inspiration that I'm driven by, this inspiration, when I act on it, nobody will be hurt by it. No one will lose when I'm acting from this inspired place. Because for me, see, that inspired place comes from my higher power. That inspired thing, that message comes from God. And my understanding today of God is very different than my understanding of what God was years ago. See, the God that I see, that I experience today, is not a God that causes loss. It's not a God of deficiency and have nots and wants and all of those things anymore. And I understand that may be difficult for some people to get with. That's okay. But I just know that for me, that's been my experience. So in my connectedness to things, to people, I no longer feel the desire to dominate, to take over, to talk louder than, to talk longer than. I don't have to do any of that anymore. It's okay for me not to be heard. It's okay for me not to be seen. It's okay for me to be seen. It's okay for me to be heard. And to know that I don't have to hold on to anything that I said or anything that I experienced, right? When we see ourselves in others, we can make a conscious choice to recognize a conflict, but we can also make the conscious choice to work to eradicate that conflict. When we see someone else doing something and, you know, we feel our ego's judgment coming into play, we can remind ourselves simply that they are us in disguise, that I am that person too. And I know that kind of, you know, causes us to pause for a minute, but just think about it. You see somebody on TV, you see somebody in the grocery store, you see somebody at the mall or at your job, and they do something, and your first thought is a judgment thought. And that's pretty normal, right? Because a lot of us, again, as I said, we've been indoctrinated. We have a judgment thought. But then we can stop ourselves by reminding ourselves that, oh, wait a minute, you know what? They are us in disguise. I am just like that person. And if you get in the habit of recognizing that every other created being that you see is you in disguise, you'll step back. You'll start to pause a little longer before you speak. You'll start to catch yourself thinking something about someone or thinking something about something. And you'll say, whoa, wait a minute. Who am I to think that? Who am I to say that? who am I, right? I have this feeling, but I don't have to act on this feeling because I get it now. I'm connected to them. Of judging, know that when we judge, we really don't define the people who we're judging. We define ourselves. See, we place ourselves in a position of hierarchy over those people who we're judging. We're saying that we have the ability to tell them what they're doing wrong and how they should be, and so on and so on. And I'm sure I'm not the only person who's done it before. Many people have done it before, right? We start making remarks that suggest I am better and in the position to make such remarks. And this is all from the ego. When we know they are us in disguise, we become unable to produce the type of harm that we have seen going on in the world today. And see, that's the reason why, one of the reasons anyway, why you see some of the atrocities that you see is because people don't realize that when you hurt someone else, you're hurting yourself. And when you help someone else, you're helping yourself. See, this is inspired living. But a lot of people don't grasp inspired living that way. They grasp intellect's living. They grasp living from their ego. They grasp living from their motivation and from their ambition. And that's what causes the pain and the hurt. Those things are selfish. All right. Now, there is a Native American saying which I love, and some of you may have heard it before. But no tree has branches so foolish that they fight among themselves. No tree has branches so foolish that they fight among themselves. Just think about that for a minute. We're from the same tree, and we splinter off into as many factions as possible on those branches, and we wage war with each other. Physical war, ideological war. We do it. We got gender wars going on. We got political wars going on. You know, we have economic war going on. So many types of wars going on because you know what? The way people see it is we're different. We're different. So we can do this to those people. Right? But how can a tree truly survive and be healthy if it's at war with itself? Can it be? Right? Humans have been at war for more than 95% of recorded history. Both written and oral history, mind you. Humans have been at war. Not one group of humans. Human beings have been at war. Okay? And this doesn't even include ideological war. The ego needs to fight. It needs to control. It needs to decimate others or get rid of and minimize others who live across the tracks, right? Who live across the river or across the ocean. It needs to do this to people who speak a different language, who practice a different religion, and who have different cultural attitudes. This comes across in our TVs every day. It's on NPR, it's on CNN, it's on Fox, it's on BBC, it's on BET, it's on Roots. Whatever you read, whatever media you consume has positioned itself through its ego identity to tell you who the other bad people are and to show you who the good people are. And there's a judgment in that. And it leads your conversations with people. It fuels how you feel in the morning when you get up and grab your phone. It determines how you rest at night when you come home from work and you're eating dinner and go to sleep and how you deal with your children. All of these things are feeding our egos and we don't even realize it. The ego says we must preserve the illusion. I'll say it one more time. They are us in disguise. So if you are consider yourself a Democrat and, you know, I guess historically they've had an issue with the Republicans, right? You see an other out there. You don't see yourself in them. And the Republicans do the same thing and they don't see themselves in you, right? And you speak a different language or a different vernacular, and you're from that side of the tracks, or you're from the west side and not the east side. So those people are different than you. And you have something that those people don't have. right? And there are certain things that are better about you than are better about those people. And even in your own home, as I said, spouses, right? Spouses, a lot of people don't see themselves unified in their marriages today or in their partnerships today, because they are so entrenched in ego identity, in ego thought. It's got to be this way because I said it. Well, it should be this way. It should be the way I told him to do it. No, this is all from the ego. They are us in disguise. Everybody who you think is different than you has put on a mask. You are seeing yourself, but you don't recognize it yet. Lastly, we lose our real worth when the ego separates us. Lao Tzu said, "There's no greater loss than feeling that I have an enemy. When I and enemy coexist, my treasure becomes difficult for me to find." When the words "I" and "enemy" exist, it becomes difficult for me to find my treasure. And what is my treasure, truthfully? For me, I can tell you, for me, my treasure has been inspired living, doing the next right thing, without judgment, without concern, knowing and having faith that this thing that I'm supposed to do is not going to hurt anybody. It's not going to harm anybody. It's not going to harm me, and it's not going to harm the other person who is disguised as someone else who's really me as well. I'm connected to everything. I lose that ambition. I lose the desire to see myself as separate from other things. And people say, "Well, how did you get to this point, man?" Because that's how this whole thing about the ego began. You know, I was talking with Dr. Cunningham, and he said, "Maybe you should tell people what you went through to get there." And I had to let a lot of stuff go, guys. There are things that some of you all are holding on to, some of the things that you've been indoctrinated with, that I too was indoctrinated with. I got to a point where I just thought, you know what? That's not good for me anymore. It doesn't allow me to be healthy. Look, I'll tell you something that's really, really crazy that I rarely speak about. You know, for a long time, I struggled with addiction. Not only did I struggle with chemical addiction at a certain point in my life, but I struggled with sex and porn addiction for a long time in my life. And I was trying to use religious ideologies to help me get past those things. Well, you want to hear something funny? The day that I decided to let go a lot of religious philosophy and ideology is when I was also able to let go of that behavior. And I'm not saying that that works for everybody, but that's been my experience. And it's an amazing experience to go, "Wow, man, you mean I don't really even have to live my life like this anymore?" And I started to get better. At any rate, guys, I wanted to talk to you all about taking on the ego today. We are not separate from anyone else that we see. And we have to really, really work on ourselves about that. It doesn't happen overnight. And I know that some of these concepts may be difficult. They are threatening. They're threatening to the ego. Of course they are. I get it. They were threatening to me at one point. But I just wanted to come in here today and continue with part 4 of taking on the ego. Okay. So that we have a really decent understanding, a layman's understanding of what the ego does to us and what it's done over time, and maybe even kind of what we do in our homes, with our families, with our children, at work, with our coworkers, how we don't really pay attention to, "Oh, wow, that's ego right there." So much of what we see, so many actions that we see are all just ego. And when you understand that you're just observing ego, you're just observing part of human frailty, right? And then when you recognize that you have that capacity for human frailty too, it changes the way you think about things. It changes how you view people, and it also changes how you view yourself. So until next time, guys, I hope that you all will be well. I hope that you all enjoy the podcast. If you did not, let me know. If you did, let me know. Ask questions. You can leave a voice message now. You can email us at info@thebarbershopgroup.org. You can DM us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. But we just try to cover a few things for you all that maybe get you to think a little bit more about yourselves. So, guys, I hope that you all will be well. And we'll talk to you soon.